Right. Thank you, Miriam and Bill. And Miriam, I wish you'd teach Bill how to play without music the way you do. He just always has to have it in front of him. You remember, and I can't think of the other two now. Bill turned in his retirement notice again to me in January. And I don't know if y'all remember how many times Barney Fife turned in his bullet, his badge, his holster, and his whistle. But he's exceeded that with me. And so he told me in January that he'll be retiring at the end of May. He came back into my office a week ago and said, I've changed my mind. And I said, okay. And so he said, I've got to be, I'm going to stay on. He said, Clay is going to start directing the orchestra. But he says, I'm going to help him along, and I've got to be gone part of June and all of July. And then he's going to be gone all of October. And he's going to be traveling some with Camp Kirkland over to Scotland and some other places playing in the big band. And I told him camp is a four-letter word with me, C-A-M-P. And I said, he keeps dragging you out of here. And the other times he's going to be, when he's out, he's going to be carrying the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And that's a great exhibit that they have. And I told him that when he retired, we're going to have an empty casket on a trailer, and it says Bill King on it. And every week, an orchestra member is going to be ordered to pull that behind their vehicles around town so we remember Bill. But anyway, he's still going to be with us in December, and I told him that he and I would talk again in December, because he said December now is his official retirement date. And I told him that in December, he and I will talk about a 3-year extension for him staying on. And he said, you know, you just make people feel so guilty. And I said, well, you're good at what you do, and I strive to be good at what I do. And then we parted ways, and I told him that when he told me that he was going to retire at the end of May, I hadn't ordered the punch nor the cake for his retirement, because I thought it'd be a waste of money. I thought he'd change his mind. And that's one thing you can count on with Bill. He will change his mind. And while he's traveling, he said, we're going to continue to be members of this church. And I told him, well, since you're going to travel so much, please give online. So that's what he's going to do while he's out. Well, you look around tonight, you're missing some of our senior adults. They went on a trip to Nashville, Tennessee. They went to hear the Charlie Daniels band. So I assume they're still on their way back, I assume. Are they back yet? Y'all are back? Were y'all singing The Devil Went Down to Georgia all the way back? You weren't doing that? Okay. But I'm glad they're back safe. If you're going to come to the prayer breakfast, please sign up tonight, men. And, you know, if you have a son or something you want to come, little Duncan Johnson Jr. called me Monday and asked me what I wanted to speak on. And one of the things he's going to tell you about is some of the crises he's been through in his life, and he didn't know what was going on. And one of those crises was this: when his son got cancer and they didn't think he was going to live, they partnered with the Medical College of Georgia, their children's oncology department. Son's fine. He's going to be here with him Sunday. But God led little Duncan and his father. God gave him a vision to build a $17 million retreat for kids with cancer and their families on Clarksville Lake. And he's not doing that to point to himself. He's going to just tell you how God uses your crisis and takes you to places you never dreamed. It's the unseen hand that Miss Diane talks about. So I want to talk about prayer, and I want to talk about the sovereignty of God. So I hope you'll come. Ladies and gentlemen, lately I've been admitting to you the things that bother me most. And I don't usually expose my heart like that. But tonight, this topic, we won't be long with this message. And that's what Elizabeth Taylor always told her latest husband: we won't be long. But I'm just going to tell you, sandpaper people have been one of the most difficult things that I've dealt with in the ministry. and where you work, where you go to school, even in your own family, there are people just irritate you. And they bring out the absolute worst in you. And I've told you many times, I'm glad I'm not a big man, because I would be in jail. There have been times I want to put my desk on people's head. And that's not good for me to tell you that, but I want you to know that you get in the flesh. And sometimes I do too. So I'm going to share with you just some simple principles that Jesus gave us for saints to deal with sandpaper people. And we look at Matthew chapter 5, beginning with verse 43. You've heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, says rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even the pagans do that? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. All of you know Charlie Brown's young friend, Linus. Well, Linus was talking to his sister Lucy one day, and he said, well, I believe I want to be a medical doctor when I grow up. And Lucy looked back at him and said, you a doctor? That's a laugh. You could never be a doctor. You know why? She said, because you don't love mankind. And immediately Linus grabbed his blanket and embraced it. And he said, I do too love mankind. It's people I hate. Well, most of us know the feeling. You know, I was reading about school teachers recently, and one teacher confessed that it would be a great occupation if it were not for the students. And then another teacher said there are really two big perks involved in teaching. It's called June and July. That teacher must have had a difficult student. Well, all of us have had to deal with difficult people. Sometimes it's a spouse, it's a family member, it's a student, it's a co-worker, a supervisor. You know, I've had churches where you have a whole lot of people who are hypercritical, that are armchair quarterbacks, and they thought they were born so that they could help God judge the world. Sometimes we encounter difficult people on the highway. How many of you have heard of the Minerith Meyer Clinic in Dallas, Texas? Minerith and Meyer developed this clinic. It's mainly for mental illness and for depression. They're some of the foremost psychiatrists and psychologists in the United States. Several years ago, Paul Meyer wrote a book called Don't Let Jerks Get the Best of You. And in that book, he talks about taking the family van, his wife Jan and their children, on a vacation to the beach. He said, after a great vacation, we were on the way back. And he said, we were on a 4-lane highway. 2 lanes, a big median, 2 oncoming lanes. And you know how traffic gets backed up when you're leaving the beach, you're going down to the beach. When you're going, you think you'll never get there. When you leave, you think you'll never get out. And he said there was a big truck in the slow lane where he should be. Speed limit was 55. And he said that the truck was going 45 miles an hour. He said there were 4 teenage girls in a Volkswagen convertible that pulled up next to the truck. And they decided they'd aggravate everybody behind them. And they were going 45 miles an hour in the 55 zone right next to the truck. Nobody could pass. Traffic was backed up 20 deep and getting longer and longer. Well, I want you to know that Paul Meyer said, I exercised all the patience I had after 3 minutes. He said, as we drove along there, and I don't recommend this, this is just what he did. He said there was an emergency lane on the side that looked like it was clear and went a long ways. He said, I pulled out into the emergency lane and passed 20 or 25 cars. And he said, I pulled in that far right lane in front of the truck. And he said, I slowed down at 35 miles an hour, which meant the truck had to slow down, and the girls kept going 45 miles an hour, and they got right up next to him. Now, I think he had stopped at a Quick Trip, and he got one of those drink and drown soft drinks. He said he had it in a cup caddy, and he said when those girls got right up next to him, he rolled down his window and threw the whole drink on the four girls driving down the highway. He said, my kids were young. They were cheering and clapping their hands. That was the coolest thing they'd ever seen. He said, but my wife, Jan, was not real happy. He said, but I thought those girls deserved some kind of punishment for what they were doing. He said, but what I did, he said, was certainly jerky, not to mention stupid. Have you ever done anything where you came out being the valedictorian of stupid school? I was reading the other day, somebody said that some automobiles have fluid drives and others just have a drip at the wheel. I like that. Now, how should we deal with problem or difficult people? Notice the possibilities of sandpaper people. Look at verse 44, but I tell you, love your enemies. Why? Because Jesus said so. But the other thing we've got to look at is, what are the possibilities of our enemies if we love them? If we're to resolve our differences, Jesus did not say, wait until your enemies change until you love them. He says, love your enemies. I remember a man who joined the first church that I pastored. He was born in the objective mode. Now, he was a good old country boy, and there's nothing wrong with that, because I found something out about country people. They love you or they'll hate you. There's no middle road. It's all black and white. And if they love you, they'll kill for you. They'll take a bullet for you. But if they hate you, they just don't have anything to do with you. And you know, I like that, because that is consistent. But this man had a wonderful mother. But he was always negative. He was always suspicious. And he just loved a good church fight. Well, his mother got sick, and she was over in hospital in Orangeburg, South Carolina, and I went over there to see her many times. It's just one of the finest ladies Delaney and I knew in that community. I'll never forget when she died. We went to the funeral home. Now, the funeral home up the road that we had used in Wagner was called the Blizzard Funeral Home. And I thought, although that was an interesting name for a funeral home, there was a funeral home in Tampa, Florida that shipped us some cremains one time that was called the Hazard Funeral Home. So Blizzard was a little better than Hazard. So we were there planning the funeral for this sweet, sweet mother. Well, there were two daughters and this one son. The two daughters both had a brain. But everything we tried to plan, he objected. And then he started tearing into me, saying I didn't know what I was doing. And so finally I looked at his sisters and I said, if you'll get him to shut his mouth, and I said in front of him, we will plan a celebration of the life of your mom, but I can't put up with him anymore. And they got him to hush. We planned the funeral. It went well. I thought that man would hate my guts for the rest of my life, and I did not care. About 2 months after the funeral, he called me. He invited me to go fishing. We'd go fishing on the Edisto River. We were fishing for catfish. And then he had all of his camping equipment on the boat. We'd pull off to the side. He'd clean the catfish and cook them right there on the river. And I can't tell you how many times we went fishing. We became the best of friends. And I'll never forget the day that I announced my resignation. That tough old bird just stood up and cried. Sometimes people who appear to be your enemy if you'll love them and minister to their family, they have some possibilities. Even a sandpaper person has a possibility of showing some positive qualities. Now notice some principles that Jesus gave us to deal with sandpaper people. He gave a proper method of dealing with the problem. He said, first of all, he said, love them. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't have the power within my flesh to love people that are my enemies who hate me. I'll just be honest. And I think it's impossible for us to conjure up human love for enemies. I'm quite sure God never expects an unbeliever to love his enemies. So there's something within the human spirit that wants to strike out. We want to retaliate against difficult people. But you see, with Christian, it's different, or at least it should be, because the Bible tells us God has placed within our hearts a deposit of divine love. And in this kind of love, Jesus says we're to extend that love to our enemies. And when you look at the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians 5, 22 and 23, if we're walking in the Spirit and we're Spirit-filled people, that's the characteristics: love, joy, peace, patience, and on it goes as we deal with all people. Now here's how we normally respond. There was a girl named Janine Brooks. She was a dental student. It was tough to make ends meet. One day a man, while she was a student, crashed into her automobile. He didn't stop. He didn't apologize. And he didn't offer to pay for her repairs. Well, that was very difficult for a dental student to come up with enough money to pay for the repairs. She must have only had liability insurance on her car, so it was a hit and run. She said she finished dental school and she set up her practice as a dentist in that town. She said it had been about 10 years since the wreck. And she said one day that a man came for an appointment and walked into her office, into the examination room, and she knew exactly who it was. He didn't recognize her, but she recognized him. And after she did x-rays and evaluation examination, she said, I'm sorry, but she said, I'm going to have to pull one of your teeth. And he said, Dr. Brooks, is this going to hurt? She said, of course not. And she said, I lied to him that day. 1 Corinthians 13 says, love never fails. You know, the mentoring program in our public schools, it's designed so that those kids get a friend. And many of them come from troubled homes. And so with your mentoring them, that they get to experience love and it'll change their behavior. Lavish your love on your enemies. So that's one principle. He said, love them. Difficult. Here's another one. Jesus says that we ought to bless our enemies. When the Apostle Paul wrote his letter to Titus, here's what he said: speak evil of no one, but be peaceable, gentle, showing all humility to all men. Sometimes we run into people who just verbally abuse us. I had somebody who came in one time and just chewed me out. I just didn't say anything. And when they got through, they stood up in front of my desk and pointed at Delaine's portrait on the wall in my office here and said, that is a beautiful woman and you don't deserve her. That's it. Barney got his bullet. And I walked out from around my desk. Ellen heard everything that was going on. And I put my arm on the lady's shoulder. I said, why don't you just go on home? And when you have a little more extra time on your hand, just come back by and encourage me again. I know I don't deserve the blame. That's the best con job I ever did in my whole life, but I don't need anybody who's criticizing me about other things to tell me that. I just don't want to hear it. But here it says, we need to be gentle, humble, compassionate, and bless other people. I love this. You can get in a fight with a skunk, and you can win, but you'll never smell the same. Somebody curses you, he says you bless them. Return encouragement to them. Compliment them. Build them up. Somebody said the best way to destroy your enemies is make them your friend. A big landmark event in our life in the May family is when Dad agreed to go to assisted living with Mom. And right after he got there, he came to me, he said, "Son, I want you to sell my house." We built the house 40 years prior, and I thought, well, we'd just leave them in assisted living. We'd keep the house up. It was furnished. And after they passed away, we'd sell it. It was right in the middle of the recession when the housing market was in the bottom. And when Dad made his mind up to do something, he would not be moved. He said, "Son, I want all the carpet pulled up in the house." He had number one oak flooring he had covered with carpet for the last 30 years. And we pulled the carpet up. The floors didn't need refinishing. He said, "Son, I want you to hire a contractor. I want the floors refinished." He said, "I want the roof replaced." And he said, "I want the whole house painted. And then I want you to sell it." Well, not only were we trying to take care of parents, all of a sudden I'm in the middle of a remodel project. He told me the contractor he wanted me to hire. When I talked to the man, I didn't know if all the elevators were stopping where they were supposed to, but this is what Dad wanted. And so I found out something about him. We gave him two sets of keys to the house. And I said, "What I've got for you to do," and he was not going to do the roofing. I said, "I've got 7 days of work planned for you. And I've got somebody coming to do the floors. I want you to do the painting. I want you to do some outside painting and some wrought iron painting on some rails going down the steps." I said, "This is all we need you to do." So I went by one day and checked, because in 7 days he wasn't finished. His tools were all out in the yard, and he left there 24/7. He left them there. And then when I went to the door, all the doors in the house were unlocked. And so I found the man. He said, "Well, I've lost both sets of keys to the house." I said, "Well, somebody's going to steal all your tools." And so I took him in the house, and all he wanted to do was argue. Now, he was one of these contractors that knew everything about every subject you could bring up. And I'd go along and say, "Listen, this is what you've done, and it's wrong, and it's got to be fixed. My dad's a type A perfectionist. He's going to come check behind you." He wanted to argue. So I told him what he needed to do. I came back to Rome. My brother-in-law went over and had an argument with it. You know how contractors put their sign out in your front yard? My brother-in-law got so mad, he went out and pulled up his sign and threw it down in the yard so nobody could read it when they passed. Well, that helped a lot. Then my brother, the kind soul that he is, he went over. And I'm sure I would have needed an interpreter to understand exactly what he said to the contractor. So my next trip over there, here's what I did. I took the contractor through the house, and I complimented everything he did right. And boy, he just lit up. I spent a lot of time praising him for the good things he'd done. Showed him other things needed to be done, things needed to be corrected. Everything went smooth as silk. Came time for my sister to go over and write him a check. I said, "Listen, don't get in a long conversation with this man." I said, "He's going to argue with you." And I said, "I want you to go in there and tell him what a wonderful transformation he's made in this house. And if you see some things that need to be fixed, after you've just heaped praise on this guy, tell him what needs to be done. He'll knock himself out." give him a check and leave. That's what she did. And it went so wonderful. A callous word may kindle strife. A cruel word may wreck a life. A bitter word may hate instill. A brutal world may smite and kill. A gracious word may smooth the way. A joyous word may light the day. A kindly word may lessen stress. A loving word may heal and bless. Listen, love them. Isn't that hard? Bless them. And then Jesus says, this gets worse. Do good to your enemies. Now, Paul said in writing to the church in Rome, he said, if it's possible, as much as it depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, rather give place to wrath. For it's written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you'll heap coals of fire on his forehead. Do not be overcome by evil, but be overcome with good. I heard about a lady who was having difficulty with her neighbor. And she went to see her pastor. And her pastor said, have you tried heaping coals of fire upon a head? She said, no, but I threw boiling water at her one time. I recall when I pastored another church, there was a young deacon there who opposed almost everything I did. In fact, he opposed the three preachers that were there after I left. So I felt honored that we're treated equally. One day we were out working on a recreation building for the church. Somebody gave us some property next to a nice pond, and we were building about a 4,000 square foot shed that was about 22 feet tall at the apex. And I was out there with our men, and I was handing 2x4s up 17 feet in the air. And this particular deacon was working over my head. And I remember when I handed him a 2x4 to put up there at some of the framing, I stepped 2 steps away, and I heard something that sounded like a sack of potatoes hit the ground. And I looked around, and there he was. He had fallen 17 feet to the ground, and he didn't move. I thought he was dead. And so we didn't have cell phones back then. There was a man with us with Georgia Power. In our town, we had 3 Georgia Power employees. We had a secretary, a supervisor, and 1 repairman. Supervisor was with us. He got on the radio and got an ambulance out there. I went straight to the young man's house and got his wife, and we had to take him to the trauma center at MCG in Augusta. Absolute miracle. The medical staff and the trauma center couldn't believe it. The only thing he had was bruised, cracked ribs, and 1 broken wrist, and that was it. I made sure all their needs were taken care of. And I want you to know, when all that was over, he thanked me. And then he went back to being his cantankerous self, opposing me at every point. 12.5 years ago, I was at my former church preaching one Sunday morning, and afterwards they had a little homecoming dinner. He came in that day and said, I need to see you and Delaine. He said, I want to apologize for my behavior during the 13 years you were my pastor. Now, I'm going to tell you, I was having trouble breathing. I have a little heart murmur, but it was skipping that day. And he said, y'all didn't have children. But he said, I want to thank you for the good example that you set for the kids in my family and all the time you invested into them. Jesus said, with your enemies, do good unto them. And then here's what he says in verse 44b. He says, pray for them. Now, this is just my opinion, so it may be totally worthless. But I think Jesus put that last because there are some people for whom you can only pray. They're so cantankerous, so unlovely. They're so despiteful. You can love them, you can bless them, you can do good to them. and they don't respond to any of it. So he says the only thing you can do there is just pray for them. Paul said in Romans 16:17, I urge you, brethren, note those who cause divisions and offenses contrary to the doctrine which you learn. And he says, avoid them. You know, that's sad to say. But sometimes you just have to isolate certain people. They don't respond to all these other things that you're doing, investing in their life. And if you come in contact with them, it just always produces a certain amount of strife and a certain amount of conflict. Well, you say, well, I don't agree with that. Listen, that's exactly what Jesus did for us. In Romans 5, we're described as enemies of the cross. We're described as opponents of Jesus. But in Romans 5, God commended his love towards us. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. By his character, by his love, by his prayers, he has made those of us who were his enemies his friends. I was reading the other day about a husband and wife named Herman and Henrietta. They had just bought a brand new house. And as they were walking through the house, Henrietta said, Herman, you know, if it weren't for my money, we wouldn't own this house. They said, yes, dear. The next day, the delivery men from a furniture company came and brought all new furniture. She had it all placed. Herman came home from work that day, and Henrietta said, I want to take you through the house. As they went through every room, she said, now, you know, Herman, if it were not for my money, we wouldn't have any of this nice furniture. And then later on, there was one of those nice entertainment cabinets that we all bought back in the 90s, and it had the stereo and the nice TV and probably some kind of tape player in it. Gorgeous piece of furniture. And Henrietta looked at Herman, and when they got it all working, and said, if it weren't for my money, this piece of furniture wouldn't be here. Finally, Herman had enough. He said, honey, I don't want to make you feel bad, but if it were not for your money, I wouldn't be here either. I guess old Herman saw Henrietta as a person who was difficult to live with, a sandpaper person. And the only thing that kept him around was her money. You know, sometimes the difficult people we know live in our homes. My brother called me last Monday. You know, we don't talk much anymore since he got involved in his fourth marriage. I prayed for him. Just don't communicate. He called me Monday a week ago and told me he thinks he has prostate cancer. And he said, I've just called to thank you for something. And I said, well, what's that? He said, I've been trying to get to see a urologist. My internal medicine doctor said, get to one as fast as you can. He said, the one I want, they won't give me an appointment for 2 or 3 months. So he said, I called again today, and the lady looked in the system and said, well, we have 2 Paul Mays. And he said, well, one of those is my dad. He's deceased. And the lady said, I'm sorry. It's going to be 2-3 months before we can see you. She said, by the way, she said, do you happen to know a Phil May? He said, that's my brother. She said, oh, he was my pastor for 13 years. I want to tell you a few stories on your brother. And so she told some stories about me, funny things. And all of a sudden she said, this is Monday. Can you be here Wednesday at 2:30? So Paul called to thank me for leaving a good reputation at my last church. He still hasn't told me that he's going through a divorce. and that he separated from this fourth wife and all the problems back in mid-December. State of South Carolina, takes 1 year for your divorce to be final. Wednesday morning, I didn't have anything to do when I was in Augusta for the Masters, and Delaine's college roommate was coming from Columbia to visit with her, and I offered to go to lunch with them, and Delaine said, well, you would be in the way because we've got some, you know, just girl talk to do. But I'm glad she told me that. I really am. I don't want to be where I'm not wanted. I don't want to be in the middle of girl talk either. And so I looked at my sister. I said, well, I think I ought to call my call Paul and just take him to lunch. She said, well, you know what Scripture says. But she said, you do what you want to do. So I called him that Wednesday, and we met at 12:15 in a nice restaurant over there. First time in about 15 years he's bought my lunch. He never mentioned his domestic problems. He told my sister, he said, I didn't listen to Phil's advice 3 years ago, and I didn't listen to you, and I've made another bad choice. But we had a great time just talking about this, that, and the other, and he thanked me twice. That's been a sandpaper relationship for as long as I can remember. And I'd been to the point where all I could do, I couldn't love him, I couldn't bless him. I couldn't even do good to him. I just had to isolate him because it was so hostile. And finally, I've been praying for him, and we were able to restore some kind of relationship and some kind of rapport as brothers. Jesus always practiced what he preached all the way to the cross. Love them, bless them, do good to them, pray for them. Isn't that simple? That's the way a saint handles sandpaper people. Let's pray together.